From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, we examine the Smarter Sustainable Dubuque Project, which seeks to lessen that community's carbon footprint. More than 300 people in the city are participating in a water pilot study, which allows them to track their near real-time usage of water. We'll find out about the new meters that make this possible and what it means for the city. We'll also talk with Dubuque residents to get their take. Then we'll talk about efforts throughout the state of Iowa to conserve energy and become more sustainable. What have you done lately to become greener and save money? Join our conversation after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. What have you done lately to become greener and save money? Conserving energy and resources and becoming more sustainable is the focus of this hour. Later in the hour, we'll talk about conservation efforts throughout the state with the executive officer with the Iowa Office of Energy Independence, who runs the Iowa Power Fund, and the director of the Iowa Energy Center in Ames. But first, we examine the Smarter Sustainable Dubuque Project, which seeks to lessen that community's carbon footprint. More than 300 people in the city have been participating in a water pilot study, which allows them to track their near real-time usage of water. To talk about that, our first guests are Dave Lyons, project manager for Smarter Sustainable Dubuque, joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Good afternoon to you, Dave.
A pleasure to be with you today.
Also joining us, two residents of Dubuque, Kevin Epperly. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon.
Yeah, we're just into the afternoon hours. And Chris Coleman, a resident of Dubuque, but also the information services manager for that city. Chris, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Let's first go to Dave Lyons, a project manager for Smarter Sustainable Dubuque. Tell us about it. What is this project?
Well, it's just an initiative to change everything about how people view and interact with resources. It started in 2006 with Mayor Buell and the City Council in Dubuque forming a sustainability initiative, Sustainable Dubuque, working with literally hundreds of citizens to establish a platform for a sustainable future. One of the items that grew out of that was Smarter Sustainable Dubuque, which is an approach working with IBM, Alliant Energy, and a host of other private partners to be able to give people in Dubuque what they need, which is data specific to how they use resources, in order to allow them to do what they want, which is to save money, reduce resource consumption, and to improve the local environment and the local economy. And that's what this is all about, is to put people in a position to make choices that are good for them.
Okay, let's talk specifically about the water study you have going on, this pilot study. It's been going on since when?
It's been going on since this summer at the implementation of new smart meters. We're into the community in June, and they are meters which are able to look at data both in a more granular basis, water readings every 15 minutes, and also to be able to provide them back after analytics are done in almost near real time to the consumers.
Mm-hmm. So why are we starting with water in this case? You want to talk about all kinds of resources. Why water first?
Well, first of all, the water process was very timely. It's not only an international issue right now about water availability and water conservation, but Dubuque was due to change out all of their water meters as part of a community infrastructure upgrade. So it allowed us to begin this process relatively inexpensively by incorporating this study into the water change-out process. So water meters have been implemented with volunteers in the community. Data is being developed. Dashboard results and analytics are returning back to consumers for change. Electric meters have been installed. That process beginning to collect information now in the community from 1,000 households. We will be able to see that data again early in the first quarter. And efforts are also underway with vehicle miles traveled or mobility data, as well as natural gas data.
Okay. Let's focus on water here, first of all, and talk with Chris, resident of Dubuque. You've had this smart device in your home and experienced it firsthand for how long?
Actually, we started installing these to collect some historical data. Mine was installed in early February of 2010,
mm-hmm.
and it's been an interesting journey to actually have the installation done and then to see the data on the portal and quantify a lot of the day-to-day activities that we do.
Talk to me first as a, just a resident of Dubuque. So most of us just have the water meter going on in the basement, and we are not aware of it too much unless we go down to the basement and look at that, which most people don't do. So how is that different when you have it installed in your home, the smart device?
What's different for me is a couple of things. First is how often the data is read. Normal traditional water meters are read once a month. Some cities are even read quarterly, usually by somebody walking around the neighborhood or driving. And what happens with my device in my home and the other participants in Smart Water is that there's a device that talks to the water meter and pulls it and sends a wireless transmission every 15 minutes of what the reading is to a collector, and then that collector every 4 hours dumps its data to a secure what's called a FTP site, or it's a storage site on the internet, then for processing and analytics by both the city for billing purposes and by IBM. And with the portal then, after that data is processed, then I have an ability within a fairly short period of time, it's not instantaneous, but within a few hours, I can then look at the portal and actually see what I've used, what the consumption has been of for that past period of time.
So you keep is it the collector, am I using the right term, up in the living area of your home, and what is it, a box? How big is it? What does it look like?
Little box that's attached to the outside of my house, probably is the size of a playing card. No bigger, really. It's actually somewhat smaller than the previous device that the walk-around readers had done.
You have to go outside to track your water usage, no?
No, I don't. Actually, I track mine on the internet. So that device is, the only purpose of that smart device is to talk to my meter. And then it also transfers the data from my meter to a collection point that then transfers it to the internet and then does its thing with the processing. So my view comes on the convenience of wherever I'm at, whenever I'm at, connected to the internet.
Okay, so you've had this since February of 2010. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed about how you were using water that you wouldn't have known before?
I've learned, well, my first thing that I learned, I knew I had leaks in my house. I knew I had a couple faucets that were kind of leaking and a toilet that sounded like it was running. When my first view happened of the portal, I actually quantified that leak and can see I was losing about 4 gallons of water per hour in a leak. And that's pretty significant when you look at that over time. So that for me then, when I looked at the portal, I had, you know, we're indicating a leak and we're quantifying it as 4 gallons per hour. And then I had a link then that I clicked on that I could report that leak that immediately got some things in process that the city is offering in terms of guidance for where to look for leaks and how to look for some efficiencies in your home. I contacted a plumber. There actually were 5 different places that I had leaks in my home. And then the city, as a way of encouraging people to reduce waste of water resources, provides for up to $100 or 50% of the repair costs in terms of a grant. So that makes my return on investment, which, you know, really we don't think about return on investments and quantification of something like a leak in my house, but with the data that I have, it makes it fairly easy for me to see that this is a very worthwhile thing to do, not only in terms of saving resources, but also in terms of saving money.
So Dave Lyons, about this money that the city offers, why does that make sense for the city to offer money to pay half for people to fix leaks, make repairs, reduce water efficiency?
It's to create a more efficient infrastructure long term. So the first thing that recognizes the city is incurring costs to manufacture a product and deliver it into the marketplace. There's a lot of costs that go into that, not only in relationship to the costs of building the infrastructure, but, for example, electricity. When a city is the largest user of electricity, the largest single component of that electricity use is pumping, storing, treating, and distributing water. Mm. Being able to not have to deliver water will reduce costs. Being able to have more efficiency in the system will have fewer infrastructure outlays, fewer infrastructure costs in the future. So what it's meant to do is it's meant to really kind of close the cycle. It's meant to give people the information they need to take action, and it's meant to support them when they take action, and then it's meant to be able to return the value of the savings that come from that action back to the resident.
Dave Lyons, Project Manager for Smarter Sustainable Dubuque. They have a pilot water study going on right now involving several hundred Dubuque residents. Kevin Epperly is a resident of Dubuque on this study. Kevin, tell us, how many? What's your household like? How many people living in your home?
Well, there's five of us all together, and I've got two teenagers and an almost teenager, and we use quite a bit of water.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what motivated you to get in touch and be part of this project?
Well, I've been very interested in sustainability, and I've got a house that purchased about 5 years ago. Like a lot of old houses, there's a lot of water leaks. It seems like the meter's running, and you wonder, how could we be using so much water?
Right.
So we had the smart meters put in about 7 or 8 months ago, and the city had a program where you can actually earn prizes, and you get on the internet on that portal, and you can see how much water you're using, and you get assigned to different teams. And I went to a training session that explained all this that the city put on, and I thought, boy, my kids are going to love this. And I kind of explained it all to them, and they jumped all over this, and they were going on the website every day to see how many gallons of water we used, and see how our team was doing, and there was a winner announced every day, and you earned points, and they could actually get some cool stuff with the points that they earned. So they got very excited about the whole process, and they could see that we were using a lot more water than we should be. So they went on a mission and found some leaky a leaky toilet and a leaky shower, and I was retailing some floors this fall, and it was a perfect opportunity to take care of the toilet and replace the hot water side of the shower, which meant not only was I wasting water, but we were also wasting heated water that we were paying to heat. So
Now, did it also change your behavior and your children's behavior in terms of how long you stand under a shower? How much water you put in the bath for a bath?
Well, I think it made everybody more aware.
Right.
Of how much water it actually you use to take a 3-minute shower versus a 15-minute shower. And I know the kids become much more aware about how much water we were using, washing the cars, cleaning the aquariums that we have in the house for fish and turtles and such, and watering the 30 or 40 plants that we have inside the house as well as things outside. And I know that initially there was always the joke back and forth of who was taking the longest shower, and some of the kids were even kind of timing each other at first. I think it just brought a real awareness of how much water we're using and how we can conserve water.
Right. Dave Lyons, is that really the point of this project? It seems like raising awareness is going to get us a long way in terms of just reducing our water use.
Well, one of the things that Dubuque recognizes, there's all kinds of smart meter projects going on around the country where people think if you apply new technology to a problem, it's suddenly going to get better. I think there's a recognition in Dubuque that smart technology is fine, but it's really the community's ability to understand what to do with that technology and how to use it. There's a term up in Dubuque, "What's in it for me?" I mean, that's not a dirty word. It's really we should be able to explain exactly how much money would I save if I change this habit. Exactly how much resources would I conserve if I changed how I did things. Exactly what would be the lessening of my personal carbon footprint if I went ahead and incurred a certain cost. So really, this is all about putting the residents in a position to have their data so they can decide what makes sense for them to do it. And in fact, this portal that we've talked about that's available to each of the consumers, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty advanced as it was developed by IBM. It expresses itself in gallons of water. But if you want to see it expressed in terms of how much money I'm spending or saving, you click on a button. If you want to see it expressed in terms of how many pounds of carbon are being developed by my home versus emissions saved in my home, you can click on that as well. The other aspect that's pretty interesting is that to make it socially engaging, it's also connected to social media and to social engagement of the ability to team, the ability to do personal efforts, the ability to set benchmarks, the ability to see, you know, how is my four-bedroom, three-bath house with two people in it compared to an average three-bath home like that in the community. It empowers people with the data, and then it also completes their ROI. Is it worth me changing my habits? And what we're finding is a lot of aha moments where people say, you know, until it got to this point, I really wasn't sure I was going to do something about my habits, but boy, that really pushed me to do something.
If you'd like to join us with a way in which you have become greener around the home, how have you saved money, be it with water or other resources, give us a ring. Maybe it's an idea that other Exchange listeners can use. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. 1-866-780-9100 to share your perhaps very simple green idea around the home to save energy, resources, save money. Chris, did you have an aha moment that Dave mentioned, aha moments in this study?
I actually have had a few. One that I think was probably the most or largest aha moment that I had was concerning some appliances in my house. You know, we all have washer and dryer, and I think Dave talked about some of the other energy silos that we're going to be doing some smart metering with. But even without it, you know, I know I do my wash machine is an electric wash machine, my dryer is a gas dryer, and I know I use those two about at the same time. And when I started looking at some of my data, and we can look at also some of what I call the me versus me data, which says when do I usually use the most water? Do I use it in the morning or afternoon or evening? Do I use it on a weekend or a weeknight? And my pattern tends to be I do my laundry and I catch up on a lot of things on the weekend. And when I started to see how much water my a washing machine was using, and then looking at I'm probably doing my laundry during prime time for electrical charges, and you know, I have some related charges on my dryer, and then knowing I bought these appliances, I'm a good Iowan. I bought my appliances in the late 80s, and I'm not going to let go of those
right
until they die, but knowing that I don't have very efficient appliances. And what that led me to do then was to go to some of the other websites and do some research in terms of my electrical consumption and, you know, and if I do replace my appliances, what kind of rebates are available from my electrical provider, what kind of rebates are available from my gas provider, and then look at what do we really mean by an energy efficient appliance or a water efficient appliance. So as a consumer, I can create, again, some returns on investment of replacing my appliances, as well as be a very smart consumer in terms of when I'm going to do those kinds of activities. And when I go to buy my appliance, I can talk a language that I really haven't been able to talk before, saying I know that my wash machine uses X amount of gallons of water, and if my goal is to save money and to save resources, I can very quickly look at how much does a load of laundry use. And this is something as a consumer I've never had before. So I can make some very informed decisions and also look at what kind of advantages my or disadvantages that my my electric or my gas provider are going to give me on that. So that was kind of my aha, is how inefficient my appliances were. But then I'm armed with some really good data and presented in a very simple format that I don't have to have an advanced accounting degree or be extremely savvy as a computer user, even though that's kind of what I do every day in my background. So those were just some real good early aha moments.
Chris Coleman is a resident of Dubuque, also the Information Services Manager in the city of Dubuque, participating along with Kevin Epperly, one of several hundred people in the city. You know, water pilot study allows them to track their near real-time usage of water. And we've asked you for your green ideas. How do you save money around your home? What have you discovered recently that perhaps others can use? Or if you have a question about this, 1-866-780-9100. Jim is joining us from West Des Moines. Good afternoon, Jim. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. I haven't listened to the whole program, and I just heard a fellow talking about his family in some sort of a contest to save water. I believe in the conservation aspect, but in years past when we've had droughts, they ask you to conserve water, and I believe water consumption is down now in our area, and as soon as water consumption goes down, the rates go up because they need a certain amount of income, so that it's a bit of a double-edged sword. And I guess I'd like somebody's comment or
okay. Okay, Jim, let's turn that over to Dave Lyons. Is it possible that you conserve water and then the city's still got to have these water treatment plants, so maybe your price goes up even though you're conserving water? Is that possible?
Well, one of the things that the Dubuque program is meant to do is to track data in a very intuitive way. If you have simply the fact that you've got infrastructure costs, and those infrastructure costs are going to go up in the future, and people start using less water, are you going to have to raise the rates? There's two things happening in Dubuque with the data. The first is to look at infrastructure costs that can be avoided. We should be intuitively able to buy less chemicals if we know that we're going to be treating less water. We should be able to put in fewer storage facilities. We should be able to change out the infrastructure fewer times. So one of the things that has to be done is the data has to be developed in the way it's being developed in Dubuque, or else it becomes a zero-sum game. The second issue, though, is to be able to track the data more explicitly. For example, when you use 1 gallon less water, you're also using less electricity. The city has significant electricity costs for pumping, for storing, for distributing, for cleaning water. We need to make sure that all of the costs are reviewed in a holistic manner so that when it comes to water rates, we have the ability to respond and to say, maybe there's fewer gallons being purchased, but it's being used more effectively, the capital is being planned more effectively, the costs and savings can go back to the consumers. There's a second piece mm-hmm. that I think is pretty important that I think the caller is bringing out, and that is you have to plan for growth as well. I mean, one of the theories that in Dubuque is that if it becomes the most efficient place for resources, you know, the cost of water is less as a percent of running a household than any place else, or the cost of manufacturing a product has a lower cost for goods sold because of the lower cost of water. There should be more families moving. There should be businesses expanding. There should be the increased use of water. It's really not just about reducing water utilization. It's getting greater value and productivity out of the water used. So okay. The caller had a great point.
Dave Lyons, thank you very much. We've run out of time. Project Manager for Smarter Sustainable Dubuque. Dave, thank you for filling us in on that. We'll check back in to see how you're doing with your sustainability in Dubuque. But thanks for now. Also, thanks to Kevin Epperly, president of Dubuque, and Chris Coleman as well. Thank you, too.
You bet. It's been fun.
Thank you.
And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about conservation, and we welcome your ideas. What have you done lately to become greener and save money around your home? 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes. Great to have you with us over the noon hour on The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer from Iowa Public Radio's news stream. Tomorrow on this program, more than ever, referees in the National Football League face greater scrutiny for They're officiating. Instant replay technology allows viewers at the stadium, those watching television, immediate verification on whether the calls on the field are correct. What's it like being on the field and having to make a split-second decision that is put under the microscope for so many to judge? We'll talk tomorrow. My colleague Jeff Schmidt will be in for me. I'll have the day off. He'll talk with Cedar Rapids native Bill Quinby, who worked as an NFL side judge for more than two decades, plus a conversation with 10-year NFL player and University of Iowa graduate Tim Dwight. The Iowa City High alum was recently inducted into the Iowa High School Athletic Association Hall of Fame tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, we're talking about becoming greener, saving money doing it in our first half hour, Smarter Sustainable Dubuque Project, which seeks to lessen that community's carbon footprint. Now we want to talk about efforts throughout the state of Iowa to conserve energy and become more sustainable. Perhaps you have an idea how to become greener that you've discovered, how to save money, like Tom in Fairfield, who emailed us within the last few minutes. Tom writes, "I built from scratch a large solar hot water system, which now supplies our domestic hot water needs and contributes to the heating of our home via our radiant floor system. It was a great do-it-yourself project. I saved about $10,000, says Tom, off the cost of a similarly sized commercial system." Your ideas, perhaps not at that extensive. That's a big one, Tom, from Tom in Fairfield. Perhaps an easy one that you've been successful with in saving resources around your home. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Joining us for the rest of the hour, Carrie Johansson, Executive Officer with the Iowa Office of Energy Independence. She runs the Iowa Power Fund. Carrie Johansson, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. It's great to be here.
And also joining us, Kevin Nordmeyer, Director of the Iowa Energy Center in Ames. Kevin, welcome to our program.
It's good to be here.
Let me start off with you, Carrie Johansson. The Iowa Office of Energy Independence is involved with what we were talking about in the first half hour, the Smarter Sustainable Dubuque Project. How?
That's right. The Iowa Power Fund funded a portion of the Sustainable Dubuque Project where we helped install smart electricity meters in 1,000 homes, and that's an ongoing effort that will help people really track and therefore, we hope, be more aware of and reduce their energy use through investments in energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm. The pilot water project led to the discovery of a lot of leaks in the people's houses we talked to. Can you have like energy leaks too that you can help identify through this smart technology?
It's not as straightforward as what you would see with the water project, but you can definitely have energy leaks in a lot of places. Windows are notoriously leaky. Your walls are very leaky if they're not filled with insulation. And there are also lots of leaks in people's HVAC systems that are discovered if you have a extremely high energy bill one month. You might want to get a technician in there to check it out and see if you have any major leaks you need to have them fill up and fix.
Mm-hmm. The Iowa Office of Energy Independence, you're the executive officer of that office. Remind us of your office's goal, mission.
Our goal is to really increase the energy independence of Iowa and of the nation as a whole through reducing our reliance on fossil fuels and really coming to rely on Iowa-produced energy for our own resource needs. Iowa is a great place full of lots of natural resources, wind power, lots of biomass, lots of resources that we can use for energy. And the more that we can increase our use of those Iowa resources, the better our economy is going to be.
I want to go in depth with a couple of the things that you mentioned a little bit later, but I want to go to Kevin Nordmeyer right now, director of the Iowa Center, Energy Center in Ames. Tell us about the most exciting developments at your center currently, Kevin, please.
Well, currently we're starting some new initiatives with our center. We're celebrating our 20th year. 20 years ago, legislation created our center to conduct and sponsor research, education, and demonstration projects in Iowa to help Iowans assess technologies, to be more efficient, and to optimize energy technologies in Iowa. So currently, some things that are continuing that are still very exciting, the Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Program is a loan program the legislators set up in 1996 with our center, and we have money still in that program to loan out to Iowans for alternate energy production facilities, small wind turbines, large wind turbines, photovoltaics, and so forth.
So for instance, that solar hot water system that Tom and Fairfield built, that would have been something you might have had money for.
Correct. Anything that is defined by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC is the acronym for that, as they define renewable energy technologies, alternate energy technologies, we can fund a portion of the loan amount, up to half of the loan, up to a maximum amount by legislation at 0% interest. And so that's been a very widely accessed a pot of money, and it's been a very successful thing for the state.
Tell us quickly how people can find out more information on the web at that.
Yeah, if you go to our website, www.energy.iastate.edu, you'll see all the details on how to apply for that program. It's on a quarterly basis, and it's we receive applications and then assess those accordingly. Okay. Another thing that we're just embarking on is we received a grant, a federal ARRA grant, to conduct a pilot project in Iowa for benchmarking public buildings in the state of Iowa. So what we want to do through this project is establish a methodology and test a sampling of buildings across the state in cities, counties, state agencies, K-12 facilities, community colleges, to begin to energy benchmark performance of buildings to see which buildings make the most sense for the next level of intensive audits from the utilities or implementation of energy efficiency measures in the state of Iowa.
I want to reach out to our listeners. What have you done lately to become greener around the home, to save yourself some money? Perhaps it's a tip that one of our listeners can use. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Janet, calling from Johnston. Hi, Janet.
Hi. My husband and I actually live in Maxwell. And we have done several measures over the last few years to make our house green. We've installed geothermal. We've got a tankless hot water heater, Energy Star appliances, and, of course, the light bulbs and, you know, just lots of things to make our house greener and more energy efficient. The question I have is, does Iowa have any sort of designation for green houses? I was listening to some show on the station recently, and they were talking about California having this. And I'm thinking, you know, if Iowa had a greenhouse designation, that would be a good thing in terms of, you know, resale value of the house and that sort of thing. So
absolutely. Let's turn that question over to Kevin Nordmeyer.
Right. There's a few different rating systems out there currently. There's Energy Star. It's called Home Performance with Energy Star. The utilities in Iowa have been engaging in trying to create Energy Star homes. So that's one rating system. You can go to the EPA's Energy Star website and get more information about that, or contact your local utility, and they may have information on that program as well. That's dealing with energy only. In terms of other green issues, the United States Green Building Council has developed a LEED system, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. They have a LEED for Homes rating system, which deals with energy and water and materials, indoor air quality, and all those kinds of things about holistic sustainability. And then also the National Home Builders Association also has a green rating system, I believe, for residential construction as well. And then if you really want to go for it, there's what's called the Living Building Challenge. And there's, I believe, some folks in Fairfield that have been piloting a Living Building Challenge construction, which tries to get to a net zero methodology and zero carbon methodology for residential construction.
Janet in Johnston, thank you very much for those comments and that question.
Thank you.
And Kevin Nordmeyer, you've been listening to, director of the Iowa Energy Center in Ames. Also with us, Carrie Johansson, executive officer of the Iowa Office of Energy Independence. She also runs the Iowa Power Fund. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100 with your green energy saving or resource saving tips, 1-866-780-9100, or questions, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Carrie Johansson, I needed to talk to you about this because it's been in the news. The incoming Speaker of the Iowa House, Republican Craig Paulson of Hiawatha, has said his party, the Republicans, are looking to cut state spending by 15% over the next 5 years. One of the things he's identified is cutting support of the Iowa Power Fund, which you run. He says it would save $25 million. Also during the campaign, Governor-elect Branstad referred to the Iowa Power Fund as a colossal failure. So make the argument now. Of course, the campaign's over. The office of the governor-elect says they will Branstad has not made any final decisions, according to the office we contacted today. They will do a cost-benefit analysis of the Iowa Power Fund to determine if taxpayer dollars are being spent in the best way possible. But make the argument. Why should we keep the Iowa Power Fund?
Well, I think what they're going to find when they do that audit is that these taxpayer dollars are being spent very wisely. So far, with the Power Fund, we've invested over $47 million in 37 different research and development projects focused on renewable energy and energy efficiency. And that $47 million has leveraged almost $300 million. So for every dollar that we've spent in Iowa here with the Power Fund, we've gotten about $6 in private investment. And these, although they may not be your typical straight up economic development projects, they're the projects that are going to yield the next big ideas for energy in the state.
Can you give me an example of that leverage, something that we can have concrete in our minds?
Sure. Let me see. for a recent project that we funded, for example, we invested $2.5 million in a company called Avello Bioenergy, and that is a company that will produce things like pavements and roofing materials, other biofuels, biochemicals from biomass, and they're in the early stages of their project. But with that $2.5 million, they're contributing $13.5 million of their own money. Mm-hmm. Especially as we're getting further down the line in the life of the Power Fund, the projects that we're seeing just really get better and better. And I think that when the new governor's office looks at those numbers, he's going to find those to be compelling.
What really seems to be bothering the skeptics, the Republicans who are questioning the value of the Iowa Power Fund, is they want to know how many jobs this creates. They say, we're still waiting for the answer, Republican Craig Paulson of Hiawatha says. What's your office's, the Iowa Power Fund's answer to that? How many jobs have been created here? Or can't we think about it that way?
I think that you can think about that. You can think about it that way. You always want to have the economy in the back of your mind, especially at a time like this. You know, in terms of jobs that we have created and retained, that's not a number that I have in front of me right now. I think it's useful to think of that, but this is really a longer term investment in what's going to be the next Google, what's going to be the next big technology breakthrough that's going to really create a lot of wealth and economic value in the state. That's more how I think you need to think about research and development investments.
Okay, so your message to the incoming governor, Governor-elect Branstad, if you cut support of the Iowa Power Fund, what will be the consequences?
I think the consequences that we're looking at if we cut support is sending a message that Iowa is not necessarily interested in continuing a robust investment in renewable energy and energy efficiency you know, not necessarily saying we're closed for business for these technologies, but if we want to keep attracting these very cutting edge companies to Iowa, we need to continue to invest some of our own money to bring them here.
Carrie Johansson is executive officer with the Iowa Office of Energy Independence. She runs the Iowa Power Fund. Kevin Nordmeyer with us, director of the Iowa Energy Center in Ames, 1-866-780-9100, talking about conservation, how to promote it in the state, in your homes, in businesses, everywhere. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Let's go to Greg in Dysart. Hi, Greg. Welcome
Hi.
To our program.
I've done a lot in our house, tankless hot water heater. I'm putting in windows, foam in the walls, more insulation. But I have to say that the cheapest and the most and free it actually pays you is an energy audit from your power company. The guy even bought a sack full of compact fluorescents, low-flow water heads. I mean, we already use LEDs as our compact fluorescents die. We're putting in LEDs. But, I mean, he just bought a bag of compact fluorescents, and it's free. It's absolutely free for them to do this energy audit.
Okay, Kevin Nordmeyer, fill us in on this. No matter where you are in the state, you know where your energy, which energy company you have because you get a bill from them every month. So you contact them. Everybody offers an energy audit.
Absolutely. In fact, that when I've been on this program before and questions like this come up, the first thing I say is call your utility provider. Those are the folks that are in contact with you every month. They're providing you service, and many of the utilities across the state, all the investor-owned utilities, many of the municipal utilities and the rural electric cooperatives all provide great programs for helping you be more aware of and how to implement energy efficiency in your homes and businesses. And those programs have been around for the same 20-year period that our center has been around in Iowa, and there's been great movement forward in terms of energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot we can do, and so people still need to be conscious of how they behave in their homes and in their businesses in terms of how they manage that energy as well. We can make a building very energy efficient in terms of the furnaces and the heat pumps and the insulation and so forth, but how you manage that energy or water usage, for example, as was talked about in Dubuque, is very important. Human behavior, how you work with your facilities is equally as important. But you're right. The utilities are the first place to go to in terms of helping understand how you can start to make your buildings more efficient.
Greg from Dysart, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And this email from Denise and Larry, even though we have been diligent over the years, hanging out our laundry, turning off lights in unoccupied rooms, taking short showers, and farming organically, we feel there is more we can do. Unfortunately, we live 6 miles from town, and no matter how we try, we make more trips to town than is comfortable. We feel if there is we're a better public transit, we could be better at conserving. A light rail system to the larger cities and a good bus system in our counties would help, say Denise and Larry in their email. Got a few minutes left of our program, and of course we're coming up Thanksgiving week this week, coming up on the holidays. I wonder if Kevin and Carrie, if you could offer us some energy-saving tips as we put up the lights and do other things surrounding the holidays. Carrie, could you offer any tips?
I think that your last caller made a very good observation. I think everyone should make a New Year's resolution, if they haven't done it recently, to get a hold of their utility provider and to set up a time for an energy audit, maybe a premature pre-New Year's resolution. That would be my first suggestion for where to begin.
Kevin Nordmeyer, anything to add to that for the holidays?
Well, when you're thinking about putting up your holiday lights, you know, the exterior lighting, seriously look at purchasing LED lights for the exterior. Also look at putting those on a photo cell or a timer so that they're not on all night long when everybody's asleep. No one can see them anyway. So, you know, look at little ways like that during the holiday season to help save energy.
So don't take the fun out of the holidays, but be a little more sensible with energy. LEDs compared to regular lights, do you know if they cost more?
Yes, they do still cost more. I just bought some LED spotlights for my home, and primarily because they not only they're very energy efficient and long-term, they last a long time, But in this case, the store I was at had 50% off, so it was too hard to turn down. So it is something you need to just reflect on, the cost versus how long you think that light will last and how much it's going to save you. But that technology is changing so rapidly. LED fixtures, there was an article in the Des Moines Register yesterday about LEDs, and it is the next technology, and it continues to improve every day.
So if you have old lights that you've been putting up the last 10 years, you may want to look into LEDs, save yourself, and that will pay off in your investment.
Right.
Okay. We want to thank you very much for being on our program, Kevin Nordmeyer, director of the Iowa Energy Center in Ames. Carrie Johansson, thank you very much, executive officer with the Iowa Office of Energy Independence. Thank you both.
Thank you.
I want to thank our listeners. Our listeners, too, for joining in with your tips about how you're saving money for this coming holiday season and otherwise as we become more energy conscious. Tomorrow on the Talk of Iowa program with my colleague Charity Nebbe, last-minute buzzer shots, Cinderella stories, and all kinds of drama on the court. That's tomorrow at 10. Join host Charity Nebbe for a conversation about college basketball. She'll talk with Iowa State University's new head coach, Fred Hoiberg. Also, UNI's Ben Jacobson, who led his Panthers to an amazing season last year. Talk about this year, and the University of Iowa women's coach, Lisa Bluter, will be on the program tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Talk of Iowa, 10 o'clock weekdays, The Exchange at noon over the weekdays. The Exchange is a production, is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, we had help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Jeff Schmidt. We always welcome your comments and questions. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.